Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hey there, it's JVL on The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today. We talked about Simone Biles and Kamala Harris. We talked about Josh Shapiro and Joe Biden's hostage deal. And it's a real grab bag. It's a supersized episode of The Secret Podcast. Here's the show. So do you want to talk about Kamala's fundraising numbers? Do you want to talk about the Society of Black Journalists or the National Association of Black Journalists moment, which you and I have not spoken about? I did a thing with Tim about it. Or do you want to talk about
Josh Shapiro?
I know.
I love how you guys just jumped on without me after that.
Well,
it's great.
We had to get it out within 5 minutes of it ending.
I know.
You were working to save democracy. So.
The fundraising numbers, I don't think requires a ton of time spent on it. So, like, we can kind of cruise by that one, which is, do you have the number in front of you of what it ultimately was for her in July?
I'll pull it up.
Because here's the thing I'll say. It's like $321 million.
Okay, here it is. Let me reach it. Okay. It has raised $310 million in July, the biggest haul of the 2024 cycle. They have already banked $1 billion this cycle. They're reporting $377 million in cash on hand. And of their donors, they had 3 million donors. And 94% of donations were under $200. And the most common donor occupations are teachers and nurses.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Well, here's my main thing on the fundraising. So the month of July is actually, in this context, July 20th? Like, when did she, like, it's not from July 1. No,
it's like
10 days. So that's number one. Number two, a lot of people are comparing it to Trump's, which I think is like 100 and something million. It's 127, 150. Okay, whatever. So Trump has like at least like something like half that. And I think that it's all the more extraordinary when you think that hers is like 10 days of July. His is for the full month of July. Also, it's the month he was shot at and the month of the RNC convention. And so I think when you put it in that context, it's all the more startling. And also, I mean, I don't know. It's obviously unbecoming to sit here and do I told you so. But like the extent to which we were trying to explain to people how demoralized and like not into this race voters were and how much voters wanted Joe Biden out. Like what this money is just, it's just untapped enthusiasm. Like that's what it's quantifying. It is quantifying people being like, I'm so pumped about this tier. Take my money. Thank God we finally did something. Look, Democrats actually doing something that seems like an obvious thing to do. I think, look, and here's money. You can gauge enthusiasm with dollars. You cannot gauge votes, right? Because, but what I think that Joe Biden, and this is where I really thought Joe Biden was headed to certain defeat, had a lot to do with not even the voters I talk to all the time, sort of the double haters. I maintain that when push comes to shove, some chunk, like a decent chunk of the double haters were going to break for Joe Biden, not for him, but like just against Trump. my big concern was listening to young voters, was listening to black voters, was just listening to Democratic voters who were Clinton Biden voters who were like, I don't think it's responsible to put him back into office. I think I might just leave the top of the ticket blank. And before there were all the other couch jokes, like the big line was like, it's not really just a choice between Biden and Trump. It's a choice between Biden and the couch. And I think there was a lot of people who were going to choose couch. And that's not true anymore. That's not true anymore. And it means you got foot soldiers to go knock on doors. It means you got they got money to spend on ads to define her. So anyway, and I will say they both have about an equal amount of cash on hand because Trump has been
spent nothing during the month of July, I think. Right. That's while Biden was flailing, Trump just sat there.
So it's not like there's a huge gap right now in terms of what they have to spend. But it is just a wild difference from, and this is also, I mean, this is also one of the things we were talking about. There was just a ton of hand wringing in that moment about Biden stepping down. They're like, but you know, you gotta have, access to his war chest, which of course she does. But like, we were also like, whoever it is, they will raise a gajillion dollars as soon as they're there. Like the money to me was never something that was, going to be an impediment. And it's not like you can just see how excited people are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if so long as the candidate had the goods, and this is what I think can't be overstated, her performance over the last 2 weeks has been absolutely critical. If she had come out and fumbled this, the world would not look like this.
That's true. But no, she it's didn't. Not, it's like, it's right. beyond
it is performance defendant.
And it was always going to be performance dependent. Like, I think there was always an element of like, obviously, this is why it was a risk, right? Like, we haven't seen her perform at the look. I don't think anybody would be lying if they didn't say they are impressed and a little bit surprised by how just absolutely perfect she's been. I think that when you look at it, you're sort of like, you know, she's been doing the job for 3.5 years. Like it's not like she's not hasn't learned anything. This is where the arguments from, because the anti-antis, they're mad. They're Oof. Big mad that she is shifting her positions. And to be clear, not just shifting. Like they are big jumps from where she was. There's no, she's saying, Medicaid for all, nope. You know, fracking, fine. Money for the border. Let's do more for the border. Money for the border. Yeah, that is not how she sounded in 2019. It's not. That being said, it's not like she's pivoting from the Democratic primary into a general election where, by the way, any politician ever moves to the center in that thing. Like the idea that you don't, it's just, it's absurd, right? It's like basic politics 101. Everyone does it. But she's not going directly there. She's going from a Democratic primary where she was running to the left of everybody, then got chosen as vice president and did 3.5 years of that. And now, having governed as vice president, is running in a general election without any primary. So like from a political matter, what she's doing makes complete sense. Also, frankly, like I just love how mad people are about it. Like, did you just expect that she would be terrible? I'm sorry she's not. Did you just expect that she was going to take her lousy positions and just keep them in a general election? I'm sorry that she's being good at politics. Are you so mad she's being good at politics? They are.
They don't like
Mark it. Is it Mark Thiessen? Who's the one I'm fighting with on Twitter from Washington Post?
Oh, God. That's Thiessen. Andreessen is the Silicon Valley VC guy. Tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Josh Shapiro. Can we talk about Josh Shapiro? So
I have been
surprised at how much animosity I'm seeing from just the left on the subject of Shapiro. Now, when I say the left, I am talking about just anecdotes here. I go to the Bulwark subreddit, which is much more liberal than like the normie. I would say the Bulwark subreddit is much more liberal than the, you know, your median Bulwark reader, to Threads, which is like a crazy liberal echo chamber, to even, you know, I'd say some comments from some of our more progressive readers on the triad. And people are they don't want Shapiro. The people on the left do not want Shapiro. And he seems to be the only person they do not want. Like, they've fixated on him. Mm-hmm. And I wonder why you think that is. I have a set of theories. I'm writing about this today. I'll finish it after we talk. Maybe you'll say something that I'll steal. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest reason is that the split over Palestine, Israel for the left was extremely painful for them. And it feels like they've sewn that up. And it's not like the liability that it was 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I think they don't want to reopen that wound. And they are worried that Josh Shapiro, not just because he's Jewish, but because he has actively condemned the protesters at times. And because he, even though he said Netanyahu's like the worst leader that he's seen in his lifetime around Israel, you know, even though he said that, I think they feel like he codes more pro-Israel in part because he's Jewish. I'm not gonna chalk everything up to anti-Semitism. I think there's still a little bit of that. I think it just has to do more though with them feeling like he's too pro-Israel and he's gonna reopen that wound. Also though, he has also poked the teachers' unions in the eye. He believes in school vouchers. So it's not just the Israel-Gaza stuff. I think the NEA has been out there, you know, really actively campaigning against Josh Shapiro and using what is a considerable war chest and membership operation to really sort of stir up anti-Josh Shapiro sentiment. And I got to tell you, the more of that, all that happens, the more I want it to be Josh Shapiro, the more I'm like, yeah, man, stick it to him. I mean, God, tell the teachers unions are like the last people that I'm going to listen to. So,
yeah, I mean, I look at this from just a political reality standpoint, and the left's fixation on why they don't want Shapiro is to me the political reason why it should be Shapiro. Mm-hmm. Because, and here's the truth, and to my progressive friends, like, you know, fair's got nothing to do with it, right? The fact of the matter is that Republicans can win the White House with 47% of the popular vote. Democrats cannot win the White House with less than 51% of the popular vote. That is just fact. It is a 4 percentage point difference. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that your tipping point states are going to be places like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is going to be much more conservative than your median Democratic blue state, which means that your presidential ticket will have to be more center left than your median Democratic voter. And this isn't fair. Like, I get it. Like, you know, I get it. They're, you know, they would sit around, they'd be like, wait a minute, the MAGAs get to get everything they want, you know, and we have to like sit and suck on a lemon. And the answer is yes. And I'm sorry, but that's the Electoral College. Like, that's the world we live in. And
the Electoral College is not going anywhere. So you can be mad about it, and it may shift. It's not going anywhere.
Right. And look, the disposition of it may shift over time. 20 years from now, this may no longer be the case. But as things stand right now, that means you need to code more center left than progressive. And I find it hard to believe.
You need Pennsylvania.
You need Pennsylvania. Like on the Gaza stuff, I try to imagine the hypothetical Democratic voter in Michigan who, because Shapiro's on the ticket, says, well, that's it. I'm not going to vote for Harris against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And with that person, I have to imagine that person is already not going to vote for Harris because he or she will say something like, Harris is indistinguishable from Joe Biden. Joe Biden is genocide Joe. I'm not going to. Do you see what I'm saying? Like the idea that Shapiro is the tipping point on that, and it wouldn't be that the candidate herself is tied to Joe Biden on her support of Israel. I just don't buy that.
Well,
is that crazy?
Actually,
is that motivated reasoning on my part?
No, I don't. Well, here's what I think. I think that the reason that Josh Shapiro works in part, like if it was a different candidate at the top of the ticket, I might be more open to the fact that he would do damage. But what you're trying to do is find balance. And I think that she, like, first of all, you know, the vice president's going to matter what's going to matter? Like, it doesn't matter more than the president. And Kamala Harris, like, these voters, I think, in Michigan, who were genocide Joe types, they don't think she was part of that. They don't feel like she, they feel, and she has been, she boycotted the Netanyahu speech. Like, she's going to show, and I think maybe more so, and this is where I think the balance comes in, more so than maybe even a lot of Democratic sort of like donors or elites would like. She's, you know, and she's, look, she's restated her commitment to Israel, whatever, and she's talked about, she's like, right now, I think she's doing a good job of just like explaining the nuance of this situation. But I feel like she gets a lot of wiggle room because of who she is to grab a guy like Josh Shapiro. And I also, I got to tell you, when I do the focus groups with Democrats, especially Black Democrats, they're like wildly pragmatic at the moment. They're just like, what does it take to beat Donald Trump? Yeah. Do that thing. And so I think a lot of this is overblown. I think people will get on board. I think there's going to be a few loud people on Twitter, maybe some people on college campuses that will show up to protest. Maybe some of them show up to protest at the DNC. But you know what? They were going to show up and protest at the DNC anyway. So I still think Shapiro is the choice, unless my only caveat is they are vetting on a really tight timeline. And yeah. So if it turns out that Josh Shapiro, like, I don't know, did something terrible at some point, then I withdraw. But right now, I don't see why. I just can't see why it wouldn't be Shapiro.
Do you think it's going to be? That's a different question.
I do. Yeah, I do. And one of the things about, like, Walls, who I think is sort of the favorite of the people who don't want Shapiro.
Yeah. Walls is the progressive guy. He's a DFL
right.
guy.
But he's super progressive. It's like, yeah. I understand, like, people right now are looking at him in this very short audition period and they're saying, but he codes, look, you know, he's wearing a t-shirt and a hat. Republicans will love him. And I'm like, no, they won't. Like, 5 seconds of going through Walls. And the guys who have had Senate careers, congressional careers, they got super long records. They've taken a lot of votes. Josh Shapiro, he fixed a highway, right? Yeah. It's like, basically,
put,
you know,
put people in jail.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, yeah, I
get the Waltz
wouldn't take
idea,
Waltz.
Though. I mean, the Waltz idea is we get a bunch of Bernie Trump voters. Right? I think that's mm-hmm. the theory of Waltz is, hey, there are a bunch of economic, progressive, populist type voters out there who, let's pretend somebody who likes the idea of J.D. Vance, but isn't, but not because of culture war. Really likes, you know, the protectionism and the labor and all that stuff. And that Walls gets you those people and gets those people excited. And he's got this blue collar cred. He was a teacher for 20 years. He was in the army. And I understand that. Like, I don't dismiss it. I just think that ultimately your argument is correct. And those things probably, whatever it gets you, it also costs you in the suburbs. Yeah. And so it's probably something like a wash there. He's from Minnesota, which, like, it's Minnesota. And I am sorry. People got mad at me for saying that he reminds me of Wilford Brimley. They're like, he's only 60. That's true.
I know, but he looks 20 years older than her.
He looks 20 years older than she is.
He's 6 months older than her, but he looks 20 years older. And the fact is, the fresh face turn the page thing, not going, like, that's the message. So, why would you pick somebody who looks like an old guy?
Thank you.
I'm here.
I'm sorry. I know this is ageism. This is ageism.
It is,
and
but
I
you know what? The white boy summer thing, like I said, I've said this before, that if we were living in a world where we were picking the absolute best candidates, sort of sans consideration of their race, gender, and sexual orientation, either Gretchen Whitmer or Pete Buttigieg would be the pick. But because we have to do the DEI thing, we need a white guy who's straight, right? That's our DEI pick is the white straight guy, because you got to check the box, got to check that white straight box. And if you're going to do that, like, okay, so now you got Bashir, you got Kelly, you got Walls, and you got Shapiro. Kelly's a senator, has that long record, and great on paper. Not very charismatic, not going to wipe the floor with J.D. Vance, which is just a thing all of us really need to happen, I think, right? Emotionally, we all need to see
emotionally,
that.
Emotionally, we want it, but they probably don't even debate. Probably.
I don't know about that. but maybe you could be right. They're in a real state if they're not doing any debates. Like even JD. I think that Walz is too progressive. I think that Andy Beshear is, I don't think his stuff translates, for outside of Kentucky, like the things that made him capable of winning in a state like Kentucky, which isn't to say I don't think he's very talented and good, especially. I mean, he pulled off something extremely significant there in Kentucky, I'm not sure it's a transferable skill nationally. When I've seen him on TV, I haven't been like, ooh, this guy is
not a ball of excitement, is he?
Yeah. And that leaves, who's that? Right. Leave? And Pete, look, I'll just say on Pete, because I think Pete's in the mix for real. I do think, you know, the downside to Pete isn't just the gay stuff, which, by the way, voters are so funny. They're all like, well, I would vote for a gay guy. I just don't think I don't think America is going to vote for a gay guy. I will vote for a black woman enthusiastically. I'm just not sure America will do this. And so it's not that Pete is gay. It's that Pete has run the Department of Transportation in the Biden administration for quite some time. I think doubling down on the Biden administration is not smart as much as, and we all know, I love Pete. Pete is my heart. He's the politician of my dreams. There's a guy. I can't even talk to him. I bet I could talk to Josh Shapiro, but I'd be just fine.
You did talk to Josh Shapiro. Met him. He spoke at a Bulwark event.
I know what you're talking about. I took a nap.
Oh, that's right. You were not there for him. You didn't meet him. That's so funny.
I didn't. I had to take a nap. Which, you know, if I knew he was going to be the vice president, I might have foregone the hour and a half of sleep that I got. But you know, people are like, do you know how much we will have to hear about lost luggage and the canceled airplane flights and the way that our infrastructure, like, just Pete's got to, after the infrastructure bill is kicked in and there's like 1,000 new bridges and everything is great again, Pete should run on that. But I don't, anyway, this is why I think it should be Shapiro.
I think it's likely to be, not a lock.
I think
the chances of being Beshear are still real. The chance of Walz are not non-zero. I have just basically dismissed the Mark Kelly thing. And maybe I'm crazy. Like, people keep telling me, what about him? He's spaceman and fighter pilot. And I'm just like, I'm sorry. I've seen him talk. And I don't think that works, right? Also, she should win Arizona anyway. He doesn't have the riz.
Well, I don't know. I think Arizona and Nevada are her two toughest states now.
I think she has a chance to win Arizona. Nevada's harder, but I think she has a real chance to win Arizona.
Do you know what's funny
especially
about
with
this?
Carrie Lake on the ticket.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've always thought this, and there's going to be an abortion ballot initiative that I think is going to help. Arizona is it's amazing to me about Arizona and Nevada. So, first of all, Arizona has been really blowing up in general. Like, they rejected Carrie Lake. They rejected Mark Finchem, who was the Secretary of State guy who had attacked the Capitol. They have been electing Democrats. The McCain Republicans have been voting for Democrats in a number of elections. And so I guess I'm not sure why. I think it's a slide with Hispanics. But it's been weird to see how poorly the Democrats are performing this time around. Like, the polling is not, I'm surprised about where it is relative to like its trajectory as a state. I mean, Maricopa County, which is like kind of you have Pima County too, but it is it's so big and it's just filled with these sort of college educated suburban voters that have been politically realigning themselves away from the party and who voted for John McCain. Anyway, Nevada also, you know, Nevada wasn't even, when 2020, when we did Republican voters against Trump, our six states included North Carolina and didn't include Nevada. Now, of course, we lost North Carolina. That was one of the six states that we did lose. And we ended up at the very end pushing into Nevada a little bit because it was looking not so great. And in 2022, it was a knife's edge. They're the ones who elected kind of a normie-ish Republican governor while also reelecting a Democratic senator. Yep. And so a lot of split ticket voters there. But it's weird how much Nevada looks like it is almost out of, like, the most out of reach.
No tax on tips.
No tax on tips. I think that the Reed machine has been breaking down slowly, cycle over cycle. I also think 100%. COVID hit Nevada just harder than everywhere else. And people were so pissed about it closing down. And I think it stings more. I also think like there's been a lot of people had to leave. And then, you know, other people moved in. So I think Nevada is an interesting state to watch that used to be very much a sort of lock for Dems that is quickly becoming not out of reach, but not even close to a sure thing. To the point where I would say this cycle, I think it's the state. It's my first state.
That's the first one that Trump wins that he lost in 2020.
That's right.
I think that's right. Yeah. All right. Well, do you have anything else? This has been a short show.
Oh my God, I have so many things. Has it been short?
Hit me.
Well, we didn't talk about the National Association of Black Journalists thing. And can just say a couple things about that?
Please.
So.
You were surprised, right? You can't believe he would take that tone with black
women. No. Well, I have like a couple of thoughts. One is, it's like Kamala Harris must have him so crazed that he was like you put a black woman in front of him and he's like, I'm just ready to freak out right now at the first black woman I see, which is how that was. That was one thing. My other favorite thing was how she listed as part of she just listed in her first question, like things that he had said. And he was like, but that was so rude and insulting. I've never been asked. You don't even say hello. But the funny thing was like Fox News and defending him was like, ABC anchor opens with a series of insults against Donald Trump. And I was like, those are just things that he said. Like those aren't, if they're insults, it's because he was insulting when he said them.
Fox has reliably told us for years that none of those things were insults. So I don't know. Suddenly there's a problem with them.
That's right. The other thing is that I watched a lot of the like more kind of the anti set that is really struggling with how to like approach this moment now. They all were like, yes, Trump shit the bed on this. Like, this is bad. But they all did it like, this is not going to help him politically. He shouldn't do this because as a political matter, it's not good. And I'm like, when will somebody say as a moral matter this was wrong? That like Trump is a garbage racist who launched his political career by questioning the birth legitimacy of Barack Obama and now is hopefully going to end his political career because he is like doesn't know what being biracial means, right? That did you know, JVL, that if more than one race, they like come together, they have sex, they get married, they have kids. Okay. Did you know you have to choose one of their racial identities to identify as?
Well, I mean,
that's the rule.
I did know that because I'm in New Jersey, and when an Italian and an Irish get married, the children have to choose one. You can't be both.
Is that true?
You can't be both. You can't be Italian and Irish. That does not work.
Wow.
That's what we call a mixed race New Jersey marriage.
I didn't know that.
This is a Jersey joke for people. Sorry.
Well, my point being, the idea that Republicans have continue to not understand what it means to be biracial, and also, like, I don't know. I feel sort of stupid even talking about this, but like, let me tell you about this thing called America. In America, people of all faiths and creeds, colors and ethnic origins come from all over the world. And they've come here over decades and centuries. And now we're all this like hodgepodge of stuff. And that's like what we do here. And so the way that he tries to other her, like it is uniquely American. Her identity is uniquely American, not American. But this attempt by him, and I will tell you, I read your triad. The cheap heat, I've never heard that expression. I love it so much. Obviously still hate wrestling.
But hey.
I really like that as a way to identify what it is that he's doing. Those couple of newsletters around the wrestling thing, I have found extremely illuminating. They are good metaphors for what he's doing. But the attracting the cheap heat is what he is doing. He is trying to turn the conversation to her race on purpose. Like, he sat down. Why did he say yes to that? Everyone's like, well, oh, he gets so much credit. He just like went into the lion's den. Like, what are you talking about? He sat down with some journalists. Shut up. Anyway, so Trump, why did he do it? Well, he did it. He had a plan going in there. I do think that, I'm 100%. Not sure he meant to be as hostile as he was, but the getting the line out about she says she's Indian, she doesn't say she's black, when did she become black? That was on purpose, for sure. And to be fair, it works in the sense that when we're outraged at Trump, right, that's sort of like, that's what he wants. That's the cheap heat. And it does help him a little bit. I think it also hurts him a great deal, though, to like, I think it's important that people see this. I think it's important. But that there's no doubt it's intentional what he's doing.
Yeah, I am a little more agnostic on whether or not it hurts him, frankly.
Uh-huh. You have a more negative view of people.
Well, I do, but also, I mean, I believe that the Trump campaign sees one of their electoral pathways closing. And I believe they see the polling coming out on African Americans and Hispanics
in Georgia,
and sees those things reverting closer to 2020, not yet 2008 levels, but heading towards that direction, and have decided, all right, so we need to really double down on white high school educated rural voters. And we need to get to the turnout targets there. They've got to be like 102% of what we had thought originally, because we're not going to get 16% with blacks.
Yeah.
And so this is a way of trying to increase your turnout with high school educated white rural voters, I think. Yeah. And maybe that doesn't work, but I don't know, like maybe it does. I'm not, do you know what I mean? Like, I think this is an open question and we'll see. I have spent 20 years of my life underestimating the extent of racism in America. And so I try not to do that anymore. And, I don't want to overestimate it, but geez, I don't know.
Can we talk about Kamala's response for 1 second? Because you said, like, what did you say? Don't get enraged, get energized, whatever.
And be dismissive of it.
Dismissive. And she was.
Yeah.
She was.
She's played perfect baseball so far.
She really has. I think I've already said this in the show, but it is worth restating how good she is, not just relative to what I was expecting, but like relative to a lot of other politicians. And like the political instincts that I guess her, because I didn't see great political instincts coming out of there prior, about like they seem to understand who she is, who what she needs to expand. She's playing to her strengths. She's given these like 20-minute speeches, right? She's not getting up there and doing an hour-long stem winder and getting herself in trouble. She's got a great stump, and it changes. It's not like it's just one thing and she can't do anything, but like she's getting up there. She's doing 20 minutes. She's saying the thing. She's being very like leaning into why America is good. She's moving to the center of America on policy positions.
Future. She doesn't say the future, word democracy.
Future. That's right. Not saying the word democracy. And which isn't to say she's not talking about democracy, because she is. She's just not talking about it with the words, because nobody understands what they mean. And you know what? The weird stuff. This is where. So it's getting a little overplayed, because if you see a supercut, whatever. I will say, though, understanding that words like autocrat and dictator and strongman convey a certain strength to Trump that there's no need to convey, right? Like, they are the weird thing that is dismissive and they're making fun of him. His behavior at the NABJ thing is just an example. Like, some of it was a set piece, but some of it too is a guy who generally, genuinely is flailing in the face of the new dynamics.
Yeah.
And I love to see it. And I just, a real points to her for how well she has been. She's like articulating nuanced positions. I do think she's going to have to do a little more to explain how she's shifted on these positions and why. I think she's going to have to do some sitting down with reporters and taking questions. But like, there's time for that. Like right now, she's just going to barnstorm the country.
Yeah, barnstorm the country. She can do that after the election. You know, there's 96 days left. Like, don't explain one sentence more than you absolutely have to. Remain a vessel that people can project things onto. Like, this is, I mean, it's just campaign 101. And this is why in an 18-month campaign, she would have been exposed and would have had to go through all those things. But this isn't that. She can,
I think she's got to explain why she shifted on fracking, but to Pennsylvanians, but whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to say she shifted even. She just explain why her position is what it is now.
Yeah. It's so easy. All right. What else? Do you have anything else you wanted to get off your chest?
Yeah. This is like a real good one for the secret pod. So stupid. You know who else is freaking out? Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita, who in 2 weeks went from the Svengalis of controlling Trump and making him into a great candidate and running a perfect campaign of unity to, Trump team in disarray, backstabbing and internal fighting and leaking and J.D. Vance, what a bad choice. Who's to blame for the bad choice? Just like Sarah Palin. Not Bill Kristol this time, guys. Don't have Bill to kick around this time. But so he tweets this thing last night, which is just a picture of Tony Soprano flipping off the camera and says, for all my new fans out there, right? And then it's a picture of Tony Soprano flicking off the camera. Now, this is a situation where a picture is worth a trillion words. And I would like to just air a few of those words.
Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.